Hey guys, this was originally a Patreon exclusive episode, but since Chris and I have been talking about classic Doctor Who, we thought it would be cool to pull this out and release it into the main feed, for everyone to listen to. This is where we talked about The Power of the Doctor, which was the last episode of Jodie Whittaker's run, and we watched this before any of the 14th or 15th Doctor specials. As a note, this is actually in two parts because this episode was so long, so cut it into 2 1-hour episodes. So this is part one, and then next week you will get part two. So enjoy this Patreon former Patreon exclusive.
The blossomest blossom, the only sad thing. I want to know what happens next, right then. Doctor whoever I'm about to be, tag, you're it. I'm Chris Spiving.
And I'm Eddie Webb.
And today we talk about The Power of the Doctor on Genreless. Feels really weird to be finally talking about Doctor Who on the show.
Yes, I mean, we're not quite there yet. I mean, we've talked about, if we're going to do Doctor Who, we're going to do Doctor Who proper. But this is a good, for a lot of reasons, this is a good actual kind of like encapsulation of it. So I will be interested to see if we can keep our discussion to under an hour. I do not think it is possible.
Is that a gauntlet being thrown?
No, because I have to edit this.
Because you know I could wrap up in about 3 minutes and then be like, that's it, I'm out.
I don't think you're physically capable of not talking about Doctor Who for only 3 minutes.
All right, so the reason that we decided to start, or I suggested The Power of the Doctor, I think Eddie would have been good with almost any Doctor I chose, is that it is in fact the latest episode of Doctor Who. It's at a critical point for the show itself, is going to be transitioning over to Disney Plus. So Disney, so have Disney money to create Doctor Who content. Mm-hmm. We have two technically brand new doctors, and I use the word brand new a little iffy for one of them. And then we have the new doctor who will be showing up after the new old doctor shows up.
It's a weird time.
It's a little timey-wimey.
A little timey-wimey. But you're right. This is, in a lot of ways, the end of the second big era of Doctor Who, right? If you consider the end of the first big era being the classic series, you could argue maybe there's a couple of mini eras in there, but really kind of, you know, started 63, ended in 80, whatever, 9, I think.
You mean the Fox movie didn't garner its own era?
No, that was simply a mistake that had one good actor and the rest is consigned to the bin.
The Paul McGann audio adventures were exceptional.
Paul McGann is the one thing that good came out of it. Yeah. I love Paul McGann in audio. I would do an entire genreless episode about the Paul McGann audios because they're fantastic. But
we could do the Whitnell and I, though, podcast. If you remember seeing that movie.
I do not.
It's early Paul McGann.
Oh man, that would be a lot of fun.
And probably I will only say, it's a movie.
It is definitely a movie that exists. Okay, good to know. But yeah, the second era is kind of like 2005. In my mind, it's 2023. Again, you could possibly divide up sub eras in there. But you know, Russell T. Davies picking up the reins again, and like you said, it's Disney is now involved. It's still going to be shown on BBC here in the UK, but everywhere else is going to be on Disney Plus. So in a lot of ways, it's got to be some form of reboot because the whole goal is to try to get a whole new audience who may not have seen the show before. So this is a nice capstone to the second era. And in that function, I think this is a good episode. As an objective bit of TV, I have a different opinion.
So before you go on though, I would nitpick a little bit and say that this is probably the third era, because the break between Tennant and Smith I think is large enough to garner its own era, because that's when a lot more of sort of the American attention that wasn't just some of us sub fans glommed onto it and it blew the show up even more. You had more audience. They had, I think, a larger budget then. They even had, they pulled in other random actors like Ben Browder from Farscape to be in there in the Old West episode. But the budget was larger and more people knew about it. And I think that's because of the work that Eccleston and Tennant did to raise it. And then it sort of like blew up with Smith, which is also, that's, I think, potentially why Smith got to be on The Crown and all this other stuff.
Yeah, I read an article recently that Matt Smith is probably the most successful actor after his Doctor Who career. And I think that that's valid. You can make an argument for that his companion also, I forget her name. Karen Gillan, thank you. She's also had an extremely successful post-Doctor Who career. So you're right. They those two kind of push Doctor Who into the mainstream in a lot of ways. But then again, if you go back, there are other kind of milestones throughout the series you can kind of point to and go, you know, so, I mean, this is a completely arbitrary delineation of our making, but I think regardless of how we break it down, it is safe to say that this is, if nothing else, the end of Jodie Whittaker's era. And as a celebration of her era, it also works as a good celebration of Doctor Who as a show. So like, if, even though we know this isn't the show finale, if this were the show finale, it would be a relatively satisfying one. It also, it's good to talk about this because it has some interesting problems, some of which I argue are the problem with Doctor Who as a show in 2023 now, but we can get into that.
And before we start, I will go ahead and acknowledge that the chin ball run of Doctor Who has been, we'll be nice and just call it divisive, as there are people that dislike the writing. There's some people that disliked Jodie as a doctor, and there is a whole slew of stuff that you can dive into that goes in all that. And I love Jodie as a doctor. I think that she made some great choices, and she was doing brilliant work with the material that she was given.
Which is sadly an all too common lament of large chunks of this show. Weirdly, even though Tennant, for a lot of hilarious reasons, is often tied to the Fifth Doctor, I think Jodie Whittaker's actual arc as the Doctor is much more closely paralleled to the Fifth Doctor's, because she came after a couple of relatively popular Doctors. And she frankly just did not get a lot of good scripts until near the end of her run, when it was far too late. She was portrayed as a nice, quote unquote, Doctor after a very strong character stamp Doctor right before her. So she had a lot of the challenges and problems came with, and she also had a large TARDIS crew, much like the Fifth Doctor initially. So as I was watching it, it's like, I liked the Fifth Doctor run. I thought Peter Davison was underrated, but also a similar situation, a comedic actor who was given a relatively serious role and didn't quite get to put their, Jodie got more comedic chops, I think, than Davison did, but it's the, I saw the same mistake kind of happening again and on a lot of levels. And it's just like, ugh, you know, that's, you know, cause again, it was John Nathan Turner coming in trying to put his own stamp on the program. So it's just another showrunner changeover. There's a lot of similarities there. And I think a lot of the same pit traps fell in, but one of them was not casting the wrong Doctor. And so let's just get that out of the way. If anyone's like, but a woman Doctor, okay, that's all nonsense, and we don't want you in this podcast anymore. Stop listening to us. Unsubscribe now.
Yes.
But for everybody who's left, Jodie Whittaker was a fantastic actress, and she did the best she could with the material she had. I completely agree.
And do you know that Jodie Whittaker was not the first female Doctor?
No, there was another one for a Children in Need sketch, right?
Yes. I forgot her name, but she was the blonde from Ab Fab who popped in as Doctor.
Yes, that's right. Yep. Yes, they're actually, if you, depending on how you count who plays Doctor Who, there's actually quite a long list of people who play the Doctor.
And one of the things is, I love a large TARDIS crew. I love the concept of it. Not necessarily execution I've seen, because it gives you so many different dynamics to play, is each character will have a different relationship with the Doctor and then their own relationships inside of the crew. And that is a wonderful piece for drama that you could lean into. But unfortunately, that didn't happen during the 13th Doctor. Somewhat more for the 5th, but even then, they still didn't quite do it right, even under Davison's run. And they would have companions leave, companions would come back. They killed off Adric, but I heard that is because of a lot of back behind-the-scenes stuff, and people didn't think Adric was a good actor.
Yeah. Matthew Waterhouse has actually had a fascinating career. He's now actually back and active in Doctor Who now. If you also heard stories like how Will Wheaton was treated on Next Generation, there's some similarities. Sometimes child actors are really dismissed and frankly abused, at least emotionally.
Sad.
Yeah.
And as this is not just a podcast about the Whittaker era, I guess we can go on into the episode, though. I could go into a little bit more of the other stuff, but let's focus in on the episode itself. I will give Tinball one more compliment, though. While the scripts were not to the quality that I would have hoped for as a viewer and another creative, I did love the chances they took for the first season, how they went back. I've added Doctor Who before, and some of the people saying, why don't you approach some of the actual historical things that happened? And the fact that they tried a Rosa Parks episode, I liked the fact that it attempted, but not the way that it was done. It was a challenge they took. And they did some other similar things for first season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the idea of let's not go through the motions, Doctor Who. Let's do all new stuff and try something fresh. Absolutely respect the instinct and respect swinging for the bleachers. It's like, hey, we have a new woman doctor. We have a British Indian companion. Let's just really swing for the bleachers and you know, make it absolutely clear where we stand on these areas. I'm with you. Like, the execution was just, I feel like Doctor Who in 2005 was ahead of the game in terms of how television should be made, and over the past 15 years has fallen behind, frankly.
Unfortunately. All right. The power of the Doctor. The 13th Doctor, Gaz, and Dan rescue a space bullet train from the Cybermasters, but Dan is nearly killed. Having developed a sense of his own mortality, Dan goes back to his everyday life. A renegade Dalek contacts the Doctor, offering information about a Dalek plot to destroy humanity. Former companions, Tegan and Ace, investigate the abductions of dozens of world's leading seismologists and Rasputin's visage defacing 15 famous paintings. Kate Stewart invites the Doctor to unit headquarters, reuniting her with Tegan and Ace. The Doctor clarifies that the new face on the paintings is actually the Master, whom she goes to confront at a convention in Naples. The Doctor learns that the Master and his Cybermasters have allied with the Daleks to end humanity in the present by triggering eruptions from every volcano on Earth simultaneously. The Doctor meets a renegade Dalek who is killed, and she is captured by the Daleks. Unit arrests the Master, who quickly escapes with the help of the Cybermasters, who he tricked Tegan into bringing into Unit headquarters. The Daleks take the Doctor to the Master in 1960s Russia, where we have the best dance sequence in all of Who history and possibly all time. The Rasputin Master then uses Gallifreyan technology and an enslaved energy being from the space bullet train to force regeneration. In her mind, the Doctor encounters manifestations of the 1st, 5th, 6th, 7th, the best Doctor, and 8th incarnations, who inform her it may be possible to undo the 4th regeneration. An AI program the Doctor created using images of the 5th, 7th, fugitive Doctor, and 13th Doctor lead Ace to meet with former companions Graham O'Brien, who is nothing without Ryan, and destroy the Dalek volcano machine. Tegan destroys the Cyberman converter and the Cybermasters in unit headquarters just as they're about to convert Kate. And Yaz and previous ally Vinder capture the Master, and they undo the Doctor's transformation. Defeating the Master mortally wounds the Doctor as he has the sentient energy being blasted with energy, triggering the regeneration process. the Doctor takes Yaz home before departing, and they never confirm or do anything with the Yasmin Doctor relationship, not even giving the side of conclusion they did for Tennant and Rose. Mm-hmm. Yaz attends a support group of former companions, including Graham, Dan, Kate, Ace, Tegan, Ian, Joe, Melanie Bush, and missing fucking Martha Jones. It should have been there. The Doctor travels to a cliff where she regenerates into the 14th Doctor, who is alarmed to discover that he has become physically similar to his 10th incarnation, one of the best, and is in different clothes. So, let me take a break.
While you're taking your break, I want to point out that this is something we should think about when we do our Adventure Doctor Who season, is that when you actually try to describe the plot of any Doctor Who episode, it sounds like gibberish. I mean, I want to read this sentence again. The Doctor learns the Master and his Cybermasters have allied with the Daleks to end humanity in the present by triggering eruptions from every volcano on the Earth simultaneously. And that is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the most what-the-fuck thing that happens in this episode.
I condensed it down from what it was. That's half the size of the original. It's like, we don't need all that.
I know, like, I mean, again, Doctor Who is a show where, like, 3 years into its run, it was like, okay, the Daleks have invaded Earth because they want to hollow it out and drive it around like a Chevy around the universe. That was their entire plan.
I do think it's funny that you didn't make us, like, a Mercedes or a super fancy car. You made Earth a Chevy. Like, an old beat-up Chevy at that.
It's got a lot of miles on it, Chris. This planet is not in the prime of its life. I actually have not been. I watched the first season of Whitaker. I've fallen behind for a variety of reasons. So I kind of just jumped right to this. I haven't seen anything in between. So there's a fair bit of like, what the hell is happening? And then I realized, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's happening. I got the gist. Of course, yes, the Master has cyberized Gallifreyans, I guess, whatever. Sure. Okay. That's a thing that could happen. Whatever. and just kind of moved on with my life. And that's kind of how modern Doctor Who works. Happens.
That is part of the writing issue that I have that's inherent with this era, is that right. It presents these great, brilliant ideas, and then it just drops them. It's like, oh, all right, we got you to talk about it. We got some tweets. We're not going to worry about that anymore. We're going to move over here. Right. And it constantly does that. And that goes back to using even like the Fugitive Doctor. Like mm-hmm. That is a brilliant idea. And it plays on something from the Mobius era when he connects like the brain device to Baker's Doctor. And you get all these images. And you're not really sure if they're past lives of the Doctor or if they're past lives of Mobius. And they took it as a Doctor's past lives, which is wonderful. Like that opens up a whole door of things. But then to do nothing with it, that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of approach this as this is a big season finale, and usually Doctor Who season finales in the modern era are just kind of big bombastic sci-fi nonsense. It's like, okay, I'm on board with that. What really struck me is that this was probably the best 60th anniversary special we got in the 59th year of Doctor Who. Because like when you look at this and go, it's a big dumb anniversary special. It's like, oh, okay, I'm on board for big dumb anniversary specials. Like I am the target audience for seeing Tegan Jovanka and Ace on the screen again, right? You know, I am the kind of person that goes, oh my God, Ian Chesterton, which by the way, side note, Ian Chesterton is now officially in the Guinness Book of World Records as the character with the longest gap in televised appearances.
I can see that.
Wow. The last time he's not been on TV as Ian Chesterton since he stopped playing the part in the 60s.
Wow.
So that was a huge get. Story. Yeah, that's a huge get, right? And so that's a really cool moment for fans. The fact that they have a support group, it's actually kind of a cool thing because, like, yeah, there's now so many of these characters littered around. At some point, they're going to talk to each other. They kind of alluded that with the Sarah Jane episode in the 10th Doctor's era. So it's like, that's cool moments. Like, you know, the fact that she goes back and sees they actually got the actors back for the 5th, 7th, 6th, 7th, 8th Doctors. And it's like, Paul McGann to play at Doctor Who on screen again. Every minute of Paul McGann time on screen, we add it to the counter. You know, yes, we talked shit about the movie, but like his Night of the Doctor was fantastic.
Yes,
his bit here was fun. It's like, do an entire spinoff show of Paul McGann's Doctor, please. You know, but like I'm here for that. Does it make sense? Not at all. Is it good television? Debatable.
Well, part of it feels like they took the different Doctor's aspect that they're using here from Zagreus, which is one of the Big Finish audio adventures, yes, where they had a multiple Doctor sort of story arc, and they were in the Doctor's mind in a sense, and they use that for here. A lot of this era seemed to have pulled ideas from other places to mash them in to what they were trying to do.
Right, which I think goes to a lot of my... We talked before about how the first season tried some things and failed, and I do feel like the rest of Jodie Whittaker's run has been kind of, what I've heard, has kind of been overreaction to that, and this certainly is that. It's the make this as traditional as Doctor Who as possible, and Doctor Who is a show that the more traditional it gets, the more boring it gets, right?
Yeah.
Doctor Who,
I would be happy never to see a Dalek again for like at least 5 years. Just
yeah,
let him rest.
Doctor Who is a show that one of the reasons why it's been so long is because it can and should reinvent itself. And when it's working well, it does that well. It's starting to get into its own continuity, which is always dangerous with Doctor Who because continuity is a very dodgy thing with Doctor Who. But again, weirdly, this era also says that, also, we're going to do, like I said, the future Doctor and random stuff because we can, because canon means nothing. And it's just like, but there's a balance here. You know, it's a funny. But I will say one thing about this reminded me is the current master, God damn, he is underrated. Right.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Cause Missy was such a great character, and I was like, oh, well, it's a new master. I don't like him. And again, it's a brown skin master, and so people are like, yeah, it's just like, but he's genuinely good. It's like, I need you to dress up as Rasputin and dance to a modern day music while telling the Doctor you're going to kill her. And he's like, cool, got it, done. And just nails it. And it's like,
modern day. Don't get me wrong, I could sing you some rah-rah Rasputin right now, but modern day.
Compared to 1916?
1970, so
I was born in 74, therefore it is modern day.
Wow. What's it like to be so crusty, my friend?
Well, when you get to meet my age, you realize that things are falling apart and the only friends you have are the people you talk to on podcasts.
I wouldn't know anything about that because I am a spry youngster born in 1975. So you old fogies.
Youngins. But I mean, it's, I also think it's kind of contradictory, but I think Doctor Who is its best when it embraces like, this is a ludicrous concept, but you can't tip into silly, right? The common term for this pitch is camp. You want to hit camp, which is that it's a bit weird and the characters are a little aware of how weird it is, but they're not pointing at the Shogun, looking how dumb this is.
Yes.
And this master nails that tone brilliantly. Like, there's a whole scene where he gets captured and Tegan and Ace realize, oh, he's the master. And they start just rolling out the continuity. It's like Ace talking about when she met the master, Tegan's talking about when she met the master. And this actor who did not play with either of these actors just finds the perfect pitch to just stick the knife in every single time and twist it like he was there and he enjoyed it. And I'm just like, that is fantastic.
All right. I'm going to bring some structure to this before we get too far out there, which I was about to do myself.
We start at the top then, I guess.
Yep. All right. So Dan is a companion they brought in, I want to say, almost for their special The Flux, because they lost Graham and Ryan, which I think part of that is because there wasn't a lot of good material for Ryan and Graham's characters, which they themselves had a great sort of dynamic going back and forth. And they brought in Dan, in my opinion, to sort of cut off the Dr. Yaz romance that was starting to pop up that they didn't really want to get into.
Mm-hmm.
And so he interceded that. But Dan is a fun character. And to have been traveling with the Doctor and a space bullet train. Think about that. Not just a spaceship. Alone. A space bullet train. For Dan to almost be killed then and suddenly think, you know what? I don't want to travel with the Doctor. It's dangerous. What about every other adventure? What about being trapped in the past with Yaz for 5 years before the Doctor came back and got you?
And then it's funny because, like, in a way, I also thought that was part of the anniversary feel because it's like, oh, we're back to the companion randomly leaves for dumb reason trope.
And you mentioned the Cybermasters. Well, mm-hmm. So in The Timeless Child, the Master more or less takes the Gallifreyans and turns them into cyber people.
Sure.
It's a whole thing. I don't want to get into it. Part of me hates this concept and part of me loves this idea because I like cyber. I've loved the Cybermen since their first arrival on Telos with the Second Doctor.
Yep.
Like mm-hmm. The Tomb of the Cybermen is an episode I still go back and watch. There's some problematic parts, but it is a great encapsulation of that horror for the Doctor and everything else. That Cybermen are a greater horror threat to me than what the Daleks are.
Great.
And for them to be able to, for you to kill them, which is already hard, but then for them just to come back moments later, brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And yet, and this is the perfect master touch. He's like, I'm going to convert my people into Cybermen, but I have to make sure they have the big collar behind them grafted onto their bodies so you know that they're Time Lords. And I'm like, Master, could you be any more deliciously extra?
But it's that visual cue that makes it work. So then you know that they're Gallifreyans. And they're, oh! And that goes back to touching on the history of the show, because in the 70s, when we really got to run around Gallifrey, and a little bit of the New Adventures, we saw all those high colors of people on the council mm-hmm. doing all those things. And it gets to bring that imagery back. And it helps reinforce you that even though it's new, it's still old.
Yeah, and to me, that's when Doctor Who's doing his continuity right. It's a little touch that if you don't know the reference, that's fine. It doesn't matter. If you do, it's a cool moment. But it is actually serving from a structural standpoint, serving that it differentiates these Cybermen from other Cybermen. There's a visual cue to the audience because it's a visual medium going, these guys look different. They do different things. And then, oh, they come back from the dead. Okay, that's the cool thing they do. The fact that it is the visual cue is this completely unnecessary thing is just that level of camp, right? It's like, it's silly if you think about it, but it's also cool because you know the reference. So it's like, it's not quite absurd, but it's just on that line because like, when I saw it, I swear to God, when I saw it, I genuinely laughed. I'm like, that is hilarious. And it undercuts the tension of the scene. But again, like, The characters and the acting help to kind of bring that tone back around because, boy, how the script was not doing anything on that front.
So that makes me, it's an interesting question. It makes me have an interesting question then, for at least my opinion. Is the show still targeted at children, how it was originally aimed to be when we first started?
I think so. I think one of the reasons why that tone exists is specifically to kind of help children, right? Because, like, again, if we're talking about, okay, well, these robotic monsters have high collars. Oh, they do different things. A kid can recognize that reference and do that. I think a lot of two things. One, I think a lot of Doctor Who ultimately just hit on the, does a kid find this to be the right level of scary? Because that's really where peak Doctor Who is. It's a little scary. Not so scary you traumatize children, but a little scary that they have fun being scared. And that's a thing that actually can happen. Secondly, is I think kids are way smarter about connecting dots than adults often give them credit for. Yes. So the argument of kids don't get continuity, I just objectively find to be false. Because I've been a kid and I watched Doctor Who as a kid and I know the stuff that was stuck in my head. So
did you ever hide behind the sofa from the Dalek? So, cause I heard that's a big thing that kids did.
The only reason why I haven't is because my couch was pushed against the wall. but honestly, the opposite talks didn't scare me. It was the the fish vampires from the Seventh Doctor's era, the Hemivores.
Oh, God.
He scared the crap out of me.
That was almost an episode that we talked about because that is some peak who. So we have them. They reach, to the best of our knowledge at the time, they reach the child, and you see the Cybermasters actually escape with the child before the Doctor can save her. And they give a callback line, I want to say, from it was either the Ninth or Tenth Doctor, where they say, the Doctor lies after she says she's going to save her. So that was a nice little nod back to something that was very recent and not overly powerful and overly stated. Mm-hmm. I am curious how the Cybermasters knew the line, but that's me getting to like the nitpickiness of my brain compared to just like enjoying that moment.
Because Time Lords?
They are all powerful.
Right. Except for when they're not.
Anything else on this before we keep moving on?
No, let's get to Tegan and Ace.
When Tegan actually showed up on screen, I smiled, and when Ace was on screen, I gave a hearty laugh, and it felt good. Like, that is the ultimate amount of fan service.
Yep.
It's two on my fan service meter. We're gonna hit one shortly, but like, that was number two, and I was watching it with Jill, and she was watching me more than she was watching the show from the excitement I had about seeing it on screen.
Absolutely. It was great. Partially because I have always felt that Tegan was an underrated companion. I mean, obviously you and I are both big, huge Seventh Doctor fans. So Ace is the kind of that good childhood. Oh yes, that's the person I love. And she was pitch perfect Ace. I mean, it helps that she's been playing Ace on audio for 20 years. So she never left the character. So she brought a level of nuance to the portrayal that I think a character who had come back much rustier may not have brought. But Tegan always kind of get portrayed as just kind of a shrewish, kind of bitchy woman. And it was nice to see kind of a lot of redemption of that. Like, no, she's a genuinely smart, courageous character. And we get to see a lot more of that here. She's also hilariously biting wit. And again, to see her use that was fantastic. But I mean, I'm with you. The little kid in me was like, it's Ace and she's blowing stuff up and she's a baseball bat. Yay.
One of the things that I am disappointed that never happened though is it's called the Cartmel Master Plan. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that happened during this run pulled bits and pieces of that and ramped it up from an 8 to like a 13. And one of them, though, that I wish had been done is that Ace would have actually sort of been trained to become almost like a time agent through Gallifrey and everything else. And her character would have been exceptional, which part of that happens in the audio adventures to some extent in some other media. But
yeah, she's part of the Gallifrey series, which I generally recommend. The Gallifrey audios are great because it's a great kind of West Wing meets Doctor Who series. Ace, again, kind of gets short shrift because there's some weirdness in the middle of that run that she ends up getting kind of being the epicenter of. But this is another, I think, good example of showing that she is always been a smart, capable woman. And honestly, the whole unit freelancer idea is fantastic. It's the idea of it's a way to bring in these companions on an ad hoc basis. And it makes sense for unit. It's like going, hey, we're this frankly underfunded organization that people take seriously, except for when things are too bad and we no longer have the resources to take care of it. So of course we're going to hire contractors to kind of fill in the gaps, and the Doctor's companions make perfect contractors for that goal. So it's a really balanced.
A side tangent from that, then, how do you like this new version of unit that we're seeing in the new series compared to the OG unit that we were used to seeing?
I like it more, I'm going to say, because when Torchwood was the big kind of thread through season two, and it was real, oh, we're going to have a spinoff series for Doctor Who. That was like the first kind of big spinoff. I was like, ooh, that's a great idea. The actual Torchwood we got was, in my opinion, kind of meh. It got better, I understand. I should go back and actually watch it. But there was way too much kind of, let's be edgy for edgy's sake because we're adult now. It, being adult in the exact way that a 12-year-old boy thinks he's an adult. and it's just like, and the show I thought I was going to get is how they generally portrayed UNIT in the show for the past like 5 years under Kate Stewart, which is that they're underfunded. They're not just a random army traveling around Britain. There's just a handful of people who are kind of hold the line. And they don't like the decisions they have to make, but they try to do the best they can with the circumstances they have. I dig it. And also, one of the things I actually love about Doctor Who is kind of by accident, is that throughout its years, the Doctor has generally taken on female companions. And we could talk about the gender disparity about that, whatever. But the opposite of that is that when you have a Doctor generally has more than one companion, nearly all of them are women, which means after 60 years, you have a lot of female characters with a lot of experience sitting around. And so you end up with something like UNIT, because in this episode, every single human character who had agency in this show was a woman. And Doctor Who is one of the few shows that can pull that off, and it there's no agenda behind it. It's like, no, it's just these are characters we've established and we're just bringing them back. Kate Stewart's just the daughter of this original character, and you know, but they're always finding new ways to bring more people in. The fact that I'm glad that Russell Davies is also trying to bring in non-binary people to kind of continue to mm-hmm. flesh that out. But it's nice to see that, like, you know, top to bottom, Jodie Whittaker was not load-bearing in terms of female representation. Most every character on the show, except for the Master, was a woman. And all of them were interesting characters. So from that front, amazing, right? I love it.
Now, I could get into then the other optics associated with that, though, is that it is great to see all those female characters with agency kicking butt, and we know who they are, and we're rooting for all of them. And then the antagonist is going to be a person of color.
Sure.
And the lack of people of color on the good side.
Right. No, I agree. That is because, I mean, the downside of all of this is that Doctor Who is real goddamn white. And you could say historically, but the answer is real goddamn white, full stop. It's you have a Martha Stewart, you have a couple other characters here and there, but not a significant amount.
Even when they're brought on, they were treated badly.
Right, right. So yeah, having a bunch of white people throw a brown person in jail for political actions.
Some,
not great.
Some atrocious actions, I'm not going to lie, but still.
Sure.
It's, although I would like my own tissue decompressor, but that's a different discussion for a different podcast. That'd be Chris's Villains Corner.
That's such a dumb weapon.
What? That is, all right, this is our real argument. That is the best weapon in the world.
I'm gonna wand at you and you turn into a doll. I mean, it is a great way to save special effects money, that's for damn sure.
Yes, but it is also brilliant. You're effectively, well, I think they changed it for the new version. I think you can change people back. But originally, when you were shrunk, you were dead. There's no other conversation about it. But you've effectively dispatched your opponent, and you have something that's easy to hide and easily overlooked, or to be left out in the open to terrorize the other people that you're coming. That is brilliant.
It's, but again, like it's exactly the right level of bonkers, right? It's like, this is a show where the lead character's main weapon is a screwdriver, you know? And it's like, it doesn't affect wood. And the lead villain's weapon is, I turn people into dolls. And it's just like, I do love it, but it is, I say it's a dumb weapon in the best possible way. Nobody has like just a laser pistol, right? And even the characters do have laser pistols. Well, I was about to say, the people who do are kind of mocked by the rest of the cast. It's like, oh, you have a laser pistol. Ooh, that's so special. People with laser pistols are generally the least effective characters. You know, like the Badoon. It's like, okay, we have big space rhinoceroses with giant guns that we can't actually shoot anything with. And it's just like, it's seen as just ludicrous. Which
you gotta
is amazing.
Say it though. You've mentioned them. You have to say the whole line now.
What?
From the 10th Doctor when Martha shows up. Do you know it?
I don't remember it.
The platoon of Jadoon on the moon.
Oh yes. Yes.
I only know it because I showed that episode to Zora a month ago. So that's the only reason I remember it right now.
Wow. I've seen it forever.
So Kate calls the Doctor, and it's, I say in the synopsis, reuniting the Doctor with Tegan and Ace, but it is more of an ambush of the Doctor with Ace and Tegan. And that exchange is probably one of the most powerful things in the entire episode. To know that all these people have had amazing, wonderful journeys with the Doctor, but the Doctor doesn't usually say goodbye. The Doctor just drops you or leaves or vanishes. Like, as amazing as the moment was when you were picked up to go on this incredible journey, to then just be left to figure out how to deal with it yourself. That is a level of a post-traumatic stress syndrome right there in and of itself that they're having to deal with coming back to regular life.
Right. And one thing that I also like about that moment is it's a wonderful stealth trans narrative because like this woman runs in and goes, I'm the Doctor, and both companions immediately go, okay. There's a moment of like, did you say her? And then they see her and then they just completely believe it. And from that point on, you're the Doctor. You're the exact same Doctor I saw before. There's no, but you're not my Doctor. Or are you really? None of that. It's just the boom. You're one now. That's great. It reminds me of one of my favorite moments from Deep Space Nine, where Jadzia meets her old Klingon friends that knew her when she was Curzon, and Klingon hugs her and he goes, "Curzon, my old friend." She goes, "I'm Jadzia now." Goes, "Jadzia, my old friend." You know, it's just, I love those small moments where you can take the sci-fi premise and it's like, oh, but it maps to a real world thing. And it just kind of goes, it's just cool. Let's just move on.
Ah, oh, beautiful. And you also get though, Yaz getting to see these people that had traveled with the Doctor, and even Tegan saying, we are who you used to be. And that moment and realization for Yaz, who's yearning for the Doctor, that we have this unrequited love relationship going on, which I'm not a big fan of the Doctor loving companions at all. I like more of the old school mentality where you had Tom Baker in an episode where, oh, I forgot her name, but it was written by Douglas Adams. And this beautiful woman comes in and she says something or tries to be seductive to him. And he goes, what was it exactly? It was like, you're a beautiful woman, I would imagine. Or something like that, to show that, I guess you are if they say you are. Like, that is my level of Doctor that I like. I like mates running around in a blue box solving time's problems.
Right. And like, you know, yeah, same thing. Like, you know, Baker with Sarah Jane. This is my best friend, Sarah Jane. You know, I mean, yeah, I dig that. But if you're going to do it, commit to it. I mean, as frustrated as I was by the Rose thing, it was a genuine arc and it got resolved. It was resolved bittersweetly, but it was an actual romantic character arc and it got resolution. I
got multiple resolutions.
Right. I very, 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 very much dislike how that led to Martha being treated like crap for a season.
Yeah.
So that makes me unhappy. But I understand the logic of it. It's the, okay, now we need to show he's still pining over Rose. It's like, yeah, for an episode, not for a season. You know, you keep doing her dirty for a season.
But you decide to do that when you introduce your person of color as a companion.
Right, right. That's a whole nother, goes back to your, you know, the standards not being held up.
And
people of color not having the same standards as everybody else.
Yeah. And I won't even get into the stuff associated with Mickey, because that is an incredibly problematic actor. And
yes, it's like, the character's done wrong, but the actor kind of deserves some of that.
Yeah. So, right. But then I could go and look at Ryan, who was treated badly in the show, or even worse yet, Grace, who was showed up in the pilot with Jody, who was Ryan's aunt and Graham's wife, or Graham's wife is either Ryan's grandmother or aunt, who was an exceptional character. Like, Grace should have been the companion, and she was a black woman. She was amazing. They killed her. And that was to motivate Ryan and Graham. Like,
yeah. Or even Bill in the 12th Doctor's run,
oh,
you know,
God,
she had such amazing potential.
Oh, sorry. That one, I've forgotten Bill, but that one frustrates me because Bill, that the pilot with the 12th Doctor and Bill is what I would use to get people to watch the show now.
Yeah.
Because that encapsulates everything for Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. The Bill is treated properly for the first three or four episodes and it starts going downhill. Yep. But like that pinnacle, instead of, I would try to start people with Blink in the old days.
Yep.
Because Blink is a good episode. It gets a little timey-wimey, but it has a nice element to it. But now it's a pilot. Mm-hmm. And how they did Bill was just wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. I completely agree, because I'm one of the people that like feel that the 12th Doctor's run was also unjustly maligned. Better material than 13th Doctor got. But certainly Bill was another example of a companion of color being the second companion, and the narrative make it very clear you are the second companion. That's how I was just surprised when Yaz was actually at the front and stayed all the way through. It's, okay, that's cool. That's another better step forward.
But if you look at it, though, every time Yaz got to stay, but instead of letting Yaz come fully to the front, they inserted Dan, a white male character, into the mix. And Dan sort of like took some of that airtime away from what could have been Yaz's story.
Oh, no, I agree.
Even for this one, they have Graham come back. Again, instead of like bringing Ryan and Graham, or just Ryan, they bring Graham back. And it's that constant reinforcing of the white narrative and protagonist they want over the people of color.
Sure.
As we said when we started, we love the show, but we're also going to point out some of the specific things that bother us. And it's not to drag the show, but we want the show to do better. Like, and in the arc of Bill, it would have been so easy to have done better. Bill's story was one of the easiest ones to have fixed.
Yeah.
And to have made something better. And it is still possible for the Doctor potentially to go back and fix that and then turn into something else. But I doubt the actress is going to come back, and I think they're just going to let that go.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, it's one of the concerns I have with the 14th Doctor coming back, because I think it's going to be a victory lap for like the first four seasons. And it's like, and maybe even, they may even dip into, the 11th Doctor's run. But I really think what's going to happen is they're going to kind of quietly consign the 12th, 13th Doctor's run to the dustbin. Which is a shame, because there's a lot of genuinely good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm. But I guess we'll get back to the episode we're here to talk about. Ace, in my opinion, though, is the model that they use to create Rose and the other companions that came after. Ace is like the pinnacle of the best companion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they built the model off of going forward.
I agree. She was the first companion that honestly lived in the real world, right? Like, every other companion had some kind of glamorous job or was an alien or whatever. And even like the very first companions, from a 1960s Barbara perspective, Barbara and Ian were probably closer to Ace than anybody else, because they were just school teachers. There was definitely a large run where every companion had to be interesting and quirky and weird. Tegan, yes, she was just a stewardess, but also that was a certain level of glamour associated with that position.
Well, was she ever a stewardess? She kept trying to get to her job that she was hired for. Did she ever really get to be a stewardess? We heard this Tegan joke that she did it.
She was allegedly a stewardess. Hey, there was a point where she actually was dropped off, became her stewardess, realized she hated it, and then the Doctor came back and picked her up and traveled with her again. She's actually one of the rare returning companions, if you recall.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who else there would be. Pause podcast for 30 minutes to do research.
Right. I'm quickly going through my head. I'm trying to think who's actually gotten off the TARDIS for an extended period of time and come back. I mean, you could argue Rory. Because there's a whole thousands of years of waiting bit.
That was still, that was the same, like, almost the same episode. Tegan was gone for an episode or two.
Right, right, right.
And back then, and I say episode or two, there were like 30, they were 30 minute episodes. So that would have been about, what, 10 episodes before she came back? Unless they aired them all as,
yeah,
like, as a one and a half or 2 hour bit.
Right. So yeah, she might be the only one who actually got off and come back on TV. But again, like it's the Ace was, she came from an estate, you know, she was just a loudmouth kid. But she's a loudmouth kid that had a certain air, a certain heart of justice and a certain head for chemicals that the doctor saw. Doctor saw the potential in her that nobody else did. Granted, her introduction was super weird.
Yeah. She blew herself through like a time hole into space.
Right. And we don't see any of that. It's just like, she just shows up as a waitress in a space station. And it's like, I'm actually secretly from Earth 1888. And it's like, oh, okay, come with me, I guess. It was super,
you know, the more
awkward
we do this and we just ramble about Doctor Who, less about the episode, just about Who in general, I think we're going to have to move up our Doctor Who thing on our list of seasons.
Oh, no. Don't make me do it.
It may be the next season. Anything else about this moment other than the fact that when you were mentioning talking about how this master interacted with Ace and Tegan, he brought up Tegan's aunt who he had killed with the greatest weapon in the world. And then Tegan had a jab back for him, or Ace's jab, about how last time she saw him, he was half cat and he got to joke back. Everyone's allowed to experiment. Like, that chemistry is magic.
So good. So good.
Oh, all right. We'll move on. I won't even look at my note sheet. Let's just enjoy it because we're almost the hour marker. At least in one version. At least in one version of this podcast.
Timey-wimey.
So,
blowing
the
up
master's
the earth
plan
by triggering every volcano. Let's talk about that. Yeah.
Yes. Oh. 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 But so, all right. But tangent to that plan. Why does the master have to be Rasputin if their plan is just to blow it up in modern day?
Because reasons. I have no clue. I have no clue why that happened. Why the whole subplot even occurs.
They could have their little Fortress of Solitude somewhere out in like Antarctica or Alaska, modern day, to do that without the master being rah-rah Rasputin.
Right. I mean, the only thing I can think of, and this is a stretch. So one thing we haven't talked about is the fact that part of the master, one of the master's tropes, is ludicrously overcomplicated plans, right?
In disguises.
In disguises, right. Which both of these, check, on the list. And it started with the master just had complicated plans, but over the years, they've become redonkulous. Like, no, not like he's the smartest person in the room level plan. Like, why did you even go through his extra steps level of plan? And the show's kind of like Missy era is an exception, but like most other versions of Doctors, like, hey, I want to capture the Doctor, so I know what I'll do. I'll run for Prime Minister. What? You know? This is the level we're talking at. And so, like, my mousetrap, cold Rubberg, you know, master plan probably is that I want to lure the Doctor to 1916 to steal her regenerations. So if I threaten the Earth now, she'll go back to try to find out what caused that to happen, and that will lead her to my trap in 1916. And it's like, but you had a whole thing about you're putting your face in the paintings? That should have been all you needed. The volcanoes is just extra.
Yeah. But why is Graham in the tunnels? Like, we don't get Graham's investigation. All right, I won't jump to Graham quite yet then. So that's the plan, is to kill a whole bunch of seismologists and attract the Doctor to then flood the Earth with lava. Got it. Like, that is
sure
a plan. But to also be captured by UNIT is part of the plan too. Which is also a trope of the master is frequently captured by UNIT intentionally.
Right. And turns out that being captured by UNIT was part of the plan all along. To the point where the episode kind of skirts up to that a little bit. Like, they didn't actually say it, but I was waiting for them to say something about it. But I think the Master did make a passive reference, like, oh, captured by unit, you know, kind of like looking around. I mean, so it's like he's clearly, this has happened before. But it's again, it's one of those things, like, if you're just watching his TV, it's like, what is happening here? But if you go, oh, this is the Master, and it's like, okay, it's not bad writing, it's the Master is nuts.
Then, so from the new Master's end, would you're saying he's a bit much, but where would you rank him on par, not with Missy, because Missy was a genius and it's clever and spot on with everything that she was doing. Yep. So how would you compare him to Sims's Master?
It's maybe controversial. I actually like him better than Sims's Master. Mainly because Sims is good for like one episode, in my opinion. I sour on him pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as great of a Master as everyone else believes him to be.
Agreed.
I feel like I wish I could remember the actor's name. I feel so bad that the guy playing the Master now. But I feel like he's doing all the bits that Sim did, but a little bit better. Because again, I agree. Missy probably hands down my favorite Master for a lot of reasons. But this guy's number two, maybe number three, because I go back and forth on Roger Delgado. I feel Delgado, sometimes I put him in number two, sometimes I put him below this. He's the very original Master. He set the template. Some episodes he's fantastic, some episodes he's garbage, and it's just kind of a mix of it.
What about Anthony? What's his last name?
Anthony Ainley?
Yes.
You mean the Roger Delgado cover band? No.
If you're not a doctor, if you're not a Whovian, there's probably some deep cuts that you're not getting. So please go back.
This is just for us.
Watch some third Doctor and a little bit of the fifth Doctor, or late fourth Doctor.
I mean, I will say Ainley does get better when they use him less. But when Ainley was in every goddamn episode of Fifth Doctor's run, it's like, just stop. You're embarrassing yourself.
Oh, God. Maybe we should even call this episode Power Doctor. Maybe we should just call this Chris and Eddie Power Wax Life. Poetic about Doctor Who. All right. I guess I'll get back on point. So you have, that's the Master plan. The Master has the Cybermasters help him escape. Yeah. And you get the best scene, one of my favorite scenes, Ace putting on the jacket. I was waiting for the jacket and the baseball bat that she had stored there because she knew the base was going to be attacked and she knew that we would want to see her in the jacket. So that's why she brought it with her.
And again, I love the moment like where she just starts swinging the bat around and somebody's commented like, going, that bat's really useful. And she kind of just blows off like, yeah, you know, old biz kit. But it's like, I know because that bat was actually empowered by the Hand of Omega. And it's like, I know all this continuity. I know why that bat is so special. And it's the same aluminum bat. And it's like, again, for me, that was a reference for me. And I recognize that.
I think that the bat broke, though, and this is just a normal bat. Because when she killed a Dalek with it, and I could have sworn the Seventh Doctor made a comment that, like, weapons are always useless in the end or something.
I thought she...
Uh-oh, female.
I have to do continuity. I thought she had a new bat after that, and then that was one that was powered by the Hand of Omega. I have to rewatch Remembrance of Daleks. Oh, no. I have to watch Remembrance of Daleks. Whatever will I do?
So our next Patreon special, Remember the Daleks. Just wait for it.
Actually, that's a good point. Remembrance of Daleks actually has a lot in common with Power of the Doctor in some ways, one of which is that Remembrance of Daleks was not supposed to be the 25th anniversary episode, but is a better
25th
episode than the actual one, Silver Nemesis, who's garbage. So this is kind of a similar thing where like, it's actually a really solid anniversary episode, but it's not actually meant to be the anniversary episode it's supposed to be.
Yeah.